Hey, everybody. I'm Jim Walker. This is Everything is a Spring. Derek, how are you?
Hey, Jim. I'm a little loopy today. I'll get into why, but I'm doing pretty good.
Amazing. Why are you loopy, Derek?
Well, we had a pretty big project I've been putting off. One of our like lesser used showers in my gramps' house. Like, I haven't even walked down there in better part of a couple years. So it had like a huge like mildew mold issue, right? And, you know, I'm a biologist, and I should know that mold is bad for you, and you shouldn't let it get that bad in the first place, and you shouldn't inhale it. So I, of course, did both of those things. I just tackled it today. It's pristine now, but I didn't realize until, like, you know, 45 minutes in, I was just like, I'm sober. Why do I feel... Oh, I start seeing stars. Is like, let me open a window and, you know,
is
like,
that,
clear it
is
out
that
a little.
Like an... Is that an effect of like the cleaning agents you were using, or actually the mold?
Well, it's a little. I mean, the mold is the long term problem, right? Because you don't want mold. Black mold is terrible for you, of course. I should have gone and got a respirator, but you know, America. I just went and got the job done. But yeah, it was likely the cleaning agents, because you know, I let them sit for a while so like they could do their job, and I was like preparing some things.
Yeah,
so
really let them marinate.
Yeah, let those flavors get to know each other. And, it, you know, I just got to scrubbing, so I'm nice and sore, but a little tad bit loopy, so I'm going to have an uncharacteristic glass of wine while we go today.
Ooh.
Yeah, a little red.
Ooh, a little glass of red. Okay.
Jim, how's your week been?
Fair enough. Man, it's been busy. I think, I don't know if it made it on air last week, but we had to kind of just get after it last week because I had a lot to do and a lot to get done. And I did get a lot of those things done. But also, on Thursday, my truck died.
Oh, no. You just got it up and running.
Well, yeah. So it's not as bad. It's not irreversible. I'm in the process of fixing it. But the throwout bearing went out, and it took the... it took the clutch, like the pressure pad fingers with it. But it's not been a great 3 weeks for my vehicles. So
yeah, you've really been like, they've been dropping like flies one by one.
They've been dropping like flies. So yeah, so the CRV died the Friday before Thanksgiving. And then now, 3 weeks later, the truck has died, which has left me without a vehicle. And fortunately, I've been able to borrow a car, but they need it back tomorrow, which means I need to get the truck up and running today, in order to have a vehicle to get to work tomorrow morning.
No, so, true. That's a really
so that's
stressful
good.
Situation to be in, like the timetable. I know you're going to sit there under that car until it works.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. So basically, Thursday I was coming back from Lowe's, and, I had Brandon in the car with me. And so we were like pulling out, and we're at the stop sign, and it's a left turn onto a 4-lane like road. So it's kind of a hard left turn. So sometimes you sit there for a good minute, and, all of a sudden the clutch pedal just goes straight to the floor. The truck's a manual, so the clutch pedal goes straight to the floor and stays there. I'm like, well, that's bad. and, the transmission goes into first gear, locks there, and tries to push us into oncoming traffic.
Oh.
So I turn the... Yeah, so that's always good. So I turn the car off. We get out of the way so other people can go. But I kind of realized pretty quickly like what had happened, because the throw-out bearing had been making a little bit of noise. And I should have known... I should have gone ahead and been proactive, but I was really trying to get to the weekend to replace it so that I, you know, could have a little bit more time to do it. But anyway, so we ended up having to drive it home in first gear, and we played the old game of Don't Stop or We Die.
So oh, you know, fun. A classic, you know, a Christmas classic game to play with your friends where your truck is actively trying to kill you by throwing the clutch and keeping you in first gear so you can't freaking stop with a vehicle that does not have a power brake system.
Oh yeah, it's great. The good thing about it is the truck has a powerful enough starter that we were able to stop. We came to a red light, like, so we had to stop. So I had to turn the truck off. Like, I just turned the key off, right? And it has enough power, that starter, to actually start the car and move it forward at the same time.
Which is usually a con.
Yeah, so I'm really grateful that the Ford engineers back in the 60s over-engineered the heck out of that starter. Because she got us home, you know.
Man, we need to do a side episode on the engineering disaster, which was your truck. Really break down.
I actually really thought about it pretty hard about doing it this episode. Like, because I was just like, okay, so earlier I was under the truck, obviously, and I was putting the flywheel back on. And I was just like, maybe today's episode is about vehicles. Right? Like, yeah. Maybe we take a little break from bridges and we go into vehicles. But I think I do want to do the suspension bridge episode that I've got planned for today.
So. Right on.
But yeah, so that's been my week, has just been scrambling to put out fires. And then my truck breaking, and then scrambling to try to get that fixed. And then also, I think I am going to end up buying a new car.
Oh, is it quarter life crisis time?
No, I just need a reliable vehicle.
Look, it's so responsible. I'm sitting here like, you know, yeah. If my old putt-putt breaks down at this point, it might be time for, like, you know, the 2007 vet that I'm gonna have to wrench on every weekend.
Hell yes.
We'll see how it goes. I'm between that. I really want a motorcycle, but I'm not in the position to have catastrophic injury that a motorcycle may bring. But
yeah, yeah, that's fair. It's fair. You got a lot to take care of. So, I don't know. Maybe someday.
That's what I was thinking. Like, you know, things change. I know that I don't seem like the person that would probably ride a motorcycle, but I've always wanted one.
I can see you on a motorcycle, Derek.
I know exactly what my second bike would be. Like, the first bike, I've been told, you know, get something you can drop 16 times as you're learning, you know, something cheap.
Yeah.
But, you know, once I actually get the hang of it, if I go through the class, you know, ride for a couple years and like, oh, I'm going to keep doing this. I really want one of those, like, maybe not the brand new one, but an Indian Scout Rogue. I mean, forget a Harley. That thing just looks clean as butter. I really want one.
I'm actually a big fan of, like, the cafe racers. You know, the old Hondas that people turn into.
Get your big bubble light.
Yeah, like the big front headlight, but then, like, everything just really sleek and minimal.
Yeah, wake up everyone on the ride home.
Well, I mean, if you're not doing that, what's the point, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fun. But yeah, I feel like I should have, it's stupid. Like, I'm going to have four cars and only one of them is going
to
work.
Hey, well, you're getting to a point where you might be able to start selling for scrap, you know, after you pull parts off you want. Because, like, there might be a little profit in four vehicles worth of scrap in this market.
That's facts. Although the truck I am going to fix. So I will hopefully by the end of today have one vehicle that works out of the three. And then tomorrow, I'm buying a 2013 RAV4.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So it's all-wheel drive. It's
oh, so you already got it lined up.
Yeah, man. I was at the used car dealership yesterday and Friday trying to figure it out.
Mind me asking, what's that going for in this used car market nowadays?
So the deal I got, and I have really good credit, so I think that helped. And I'm putting down a pretty hefty down payment. So I'm getting out the door at 11.9.
That ain't terrible, because like, I've heard folks getting up to like 18 for cars from like 2010.
And then also, like, so this is a 2000, it's got 130,000 miles on it. Like, the Kelley Blue Book is like 12 to 16.
Those things do hold value like mother.
They do. So, and like, I'm going to run the damn thing into the ground.
Exactly. You're going to put another 100,000 on there and then drag it across 150 if you have the choice.
Oh yeah. And I'm still planning to fix up the CRV, although we'll see how long that plan holds contact.
See, maybe that just becomes your rally racer.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, hey, we've got a reliable vehicle, which means it's time to rally the CRV.
Just drop an inline six in it. Like, who knows?
I've seen people will do, they'll do the Honda V6 out of like a Honda Odyssey, and they'll jam that into a CRV.
And it's not hairing all that weight, so you got all of that torque.
You got all the twerkes, so.
Well, happy 10th anniversary. This is our 10th episode of Everything's a Spring.
It is. Big milestone.
Let's go ahead and get started. How does it feel? It feels unreal, because like, it doesn't feel like 10 weeks have gone by, but I really enjoy it. I look forward to it every week, and cheers to 1,000 more, man.
That's fair. Yeah, heck yeah, dude. Absolutely. I'm excited. I'm excited. Big Podcast has not come to take us out yet.
So well, they've tried. They've tried. We scooted them. The first week, they were like, nah.
They were like, nah. But since then, they haven't messed with us.
Yeah,
they know better.
The next engineering disaster will be is Big Podcast if y'all not careful.
Big Podcast coming down around.
Yeah, if Big Podcast wants to sponsor us, just let us know.
Uh-oh, and I was selling out now.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, let's get out of the preload. I think that's enough preload for one day.
Oh, yeah.
So, Derek, I have a question for you. Are you like a big fan of the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, yeah. I love the book. Love the movie. I mean, it's one of those movies I really don't want them to remake.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's just so good as it is. Unless they're just going to go through the whole book, you know?
Right. So, is there a book for Guardians of the Galaxy? Are you like a comic book? Wow. Are you like a comic book guy?
Not really. I am, like I said, quite loopy. You said Guardians of the Galaxy, and for some reason, I was thinking of a totally different movie. But to answer your question, yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Fair enough. It's okay. We'll get through it. So, in Guardians of the Galaxy, did you know that they feature a famous suspension bridge?
Oh, which one?
It's the Millennium Bridge in London. And it's featured in the Battle of Xandar at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy because it's this really like space age looking bridge, and it's kind of an interesting design, right? So one of the things that separates the Millennium Bridge from a lot of the more traditional suspension bridges that we've discussed is that the suspension cables are actually kind of like out to the side of the bridge as opposed to like directly
like
overhead.
Parallel.
Like, yeah, not they're slightly above, but still, but mostly they're like much farther pushed out as opposed to most of the kind of more traditional suspension bridge designs. And that's kind of an interesting feature. And it's like all aluminum construction.
Oh, super
it's
light.
It's a pretty neat bridge. And it was designed kind of to be this very futuristic, bridge. And it was built around the turn of the millennium, right? So that was kind of that's why it's called the Millennium Bridge.
It's all coming together.
It's all, exactly. And it was really kind of something to kind of mark, you know, England's entrance into the new millennia as kind of an inspirational piece of architecture, looking forward to what the future might hold. That's kind
inspiring.
Of the idea behind it. Yeah. So, naturally it ran into problems because we're talking about it. the Londoners, I guess that's what you would call people from London. Londonians.
I like that better.
I kind of like Londonians better than Londoners.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the British people listening will roast us for it, but
yeah, good
luck. I'm going to call them Londonians.
Yeah, I'll come across the pond. You won't.
Yeah, bet you won't. So the Londonians have nicknamed it the Wobbly Bridge.
Oh, always a good sign when a bridge has a nickname.
Oh, yes.
The Wobbly Bridge.
Derek.
And we're going to make fun of this. We got to get our British accents in. I'm already ready.
Oh, we do. Now, Derek.
Yeah, Jim.
Why do you think they might have called it the Wobbly Bridge?
Well, chap, if I had to guess, I bet that bitch is wobbly.
Well, you're damn right. That bridge wobblier than a pudding cake.
That bitch wobblier than my old kettle.
That's sort of a bitch wobblier than Queen Anne's bosoms. I don't know.
That bad boy's more wobbly. Wobbly than my sex life, mate.
Yeah, so...
What is happening? We're off.
We've lost it. Okay, so... Let me give you a little bit of background about the Millennium Bridge. Before it was known as the Wobbly Bridge. So, in 1996, before Brexit was even a twinkling in Boris Johnson's eyes, the the design of the bridge was actually like a competition. So there was this, there's this place or this group called the Southwark. I don't know the British pronunciation. Southwark Council, which was kind of, you know, wanting to make this bridge. And they held like a design competition to get all these innovative designs to look at.
That's good.
And so the, you know, eventually the winning entry is called the Blade of Light. And that comes from, if you kind of look at the top down view of the bridge, it's kind of got this swooping, kind of angular shape. I mean, it does kind of look like a sword. The whole thing would be, you know, polished aluminum. So it's like this very bright thing, reflective of the sunlight. Definitely bears resemblance to a blade. And cool. Yeah. And so there's some interesting different like design considerations, design factors. There's some height restrictions. And they want to, you know, this is a pedestrian only bridge.
Okay.
So good, there's not an enormous amount of loading that's going to be happening to it. So they want it to be a very aesthetically pleasing. And of course, again, like this is kind of commemorating the turn of the century.
Right. It's like a bridge to the future
type thing. It is very much so. Like that's very much the idea behind it. And so the bridge has the supporting cables actually a little bit like just barely above deck level. And so I guess the idea is to, it gives the whole bridge a very shallow profile and really a very futuristic look, because the cables are held up by these big, like aluminum Ys, or maybe they're stainless steel, but they're these big metal Y structure pieces, that is what the cables actually attach to. And then the cables are actually arranged horizontally as opposed to vertically.
Huh.
Which, yeah, is really interesting. It's a fascinating design.
Well, they're getting a bit wonky with it, huh?
They're getting a little bit wonky with it. I hope the listeners are not too put off by our terrible British accent.
Oh, my, I think that's what they want.
They do love a good British accent, don't they?
Oh, don't they, love? Oh, gosh.
we're losing it.
Lost all right. It.
But anyway, so the total structure is 1,066 feet long.
Okay.
And it's made of three primary sections. So there's the two shorter sections, which are 266 feet and 354 feet. And then the large main section is 472 feet. And the deck is about 13 feet wide. So that's kind of the actual footpath.
Okay. It's not too, too wide, you know?
Yeah, it's
like
not
two derricks long, just about.
Yeah, a little bit more than two derricks long. A little bit more than two gyms long as well. We're actually pretty similar in height. But and then there's eight suspension cables that are all tensioned to pull with a force of 2,000 tons against the piers that are set into the bank.
Wow.
Which is a huge amount of weight or amount of force, and that will support a working load of about 5,000 people on the bridge.
Okay, which, so they learned, you know, like, if y'all want to have your parade on the bridge, we're ready for you.
We're ready for it. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a lot of people. I would imagine that it very rarely sees that many people on the bridge.
Now we got to get 5,001 to march in step real quick.
One of the kind of interesting things about, we've talked a little bit about like the British structure before with like the, what were they called? The inquest, the coroner's inquest and stuff like that. And they kind of have these odd traditions, I guess odd traditions to us Americans, right?
Hmm.
One of those is that in order to have a bridge across the River Thames, somebody will tell us. Normally, apparently, that requires an act of parliament, which to me is
really
kind of wild. Yeah.
Can you imagine going in America and being like, all right, we got to get this bridge made, and you have to, instead of going to your local municipality, which is already a pain in the ass, you have to go to fucking Congress? It would we would never build anything again, except
nothing
for stealth bombers.
We do love our stealth bombers. That's
it's the only thing we will fund unequivocally.
There you go. You know, with enough stealth bombers,
you could build a bridge out of stealth bombers. Just give me a couple, you know?
Nobody would be able to find that bridge.
Ooh, that's the trouble, right? Or you get on the bridge, or you just don't know it's a stealth bomber, and then all of a sudden you're gone.
Derek, here's the thing. We already have several bridges across the United States that are built out of stealth bombers, but we can't
find them. We haven't found them.
We haven't found them yet.
They use Area 51 to distract you. You really got to find these stealth bomber bridges, but there's no radar cross-section. Good luck.
That's exactly right. And they don't show up on satellite either. I love that. That's my new conspiracy theory.
Yeah, put the tinfoil on, folks.
Derek, do you have a favorite conspiracy theory?
That the government is competent. I do like the conspiracy theory about 5G. I know it's not true, right? But like, I think there's something there because they were like hyping up 5G for years, and you know, folks immediately put on the tinfoil. It's like it's gonna put vaccines in your brain, and I'm just like, okay, tell me you don't know what radio waves are, but okay. But the reason I think it's a conspiracy, how did it get slower? I don't know if you've noticed that, but like my phone is significantly slower than it was when 5G came out compared to now. And if I switch it to 4G, it is significantly faster. And this is a new phone, new SIM card too.
That's interesting. So I wonder, this might be getting a little bit out of the track. Whatever, it's fine. We have time. We talk about whatever we want on this podcast.
Yeah, everything's a spring, Jim, even radio.
What I understand about 5G, and I'm not a radio guy, so I could be completely wrong, is that the fundamental difference of 5G is that instead of having data stored in one location, data is actually stored in a dispersed, a decentralized data storage. And so, like, my understanding is, like, rather than having to go from your phone to the tower, to another tower, to another tower, to a database, there are actually like databases with maybe like commonly available information or commonly researched information at like more localized. Right. So that's my understanding of 5G and like why it's quote unquote better. But I'm not sure. Cause also like, I think one of the advantages of 5G is that you can hold more like individual signals on 5G. Right.
Like we could be connected to the same tower. And my small understanding of cellular is like when we talked about 3G and 2G, you could only have like up to X amount of signals going through this one laneway of data at a time. And 5G is like the next, you know, the logical conclusion of that. You have X amount more signal, so we can make a call at the same time. Our call might be sitting on the same train of data, so to speak, but they're sharing the same lane.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it. Because, like, I know at one point I was having a conversation with somebody, and we were basically like in a football stadium, right? And you know, cell service is always terrible in a football stadium.
Oh yeah,
and the reason for that is not because there's not a cell tower nearby.
No, it's all those phones.
So many other people. Yeah, and basically, like, you know, there's so many other people on the cell network in that localized area that there's just way too much traffic going through it. So it slows everything way, way down. And on 5G, you don't have that problem.
Right. Like you're not getting shunted to the next closest tower because this one's signal unavailable.
Right. Like, so you can carry way more signals on 5G is my understanding. But I guess it's not as fast. I really don't know.
Couldn't tell you. Back to it. I'm taking my tinfoil off now.
Yep. Tinfoil hat away. Back to the bridge at hand.
Bridge.
So in order to get around having to go through Parliament to build this bridge, the Port Authority of London actually grants a license for the structure. And then the City of London and the Planning Commission of Southwark basically like say, no, it's cool. And so I don't really understand how that works in terms of like, you know, normally we have to go through Parliament, but we're just going to do it anyway.
We're just going
to
sideline Parliament. It sounds like someone had a little connection that just like, hey, man. Because think about it. When you think about port authorities all across the world, it's just like, you know, it's a big business, like kind of unseen, right? Like the fact that the Port Authority has to confirm bridges because of the traffic going through that laneway is incredible. It's a lot of power in that one section.
Oh, it is. At some point, we ought to talk about the railroads in America.
Like, oh, please.
My gosh.
Oh, I would love to do let me have an Amfleet episode.
And, like, and like the rail, like the politics of the railways.
Oh yeah.
Because it's insane. For anyone who doesn't is not aware, the railroads and trucking industry today hold and held enormous sway and power politically. Because without them, the country basically ceases to function.
Exactly. You can make as much of your shit as you want, but if we ain't gonna bring it to you, what you going to do?
What you going to do? And you can't make stuff without raw material that the train delivers.
Hey, it'd be a shame if your steel got lost in transport. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly. So, anyway. So, construction begins in 1998.
Oh, this is new.
Which, yeah, oh, it's very
recent. Well, I guess millennium, yeah. When else would it be?
I mean, 1,000.
Did we have bridge? Well, I guess we had bridge.
I'm sure there were some bridges.
We didn't have suspension bridge. 1,000.
Not suspension bridges, not yet. Anyway, so construction begins in late 1998, and the eventual cost for the bridge is 18.2 million pounds, which is only 2.2 million pounds over budget, which
hey, not is bad.
Not bad.
Not bad. Hey, 1998 money ain't too different.
Yeah, and then it's finished on June 10th, 2000, which is only a month late. So
they built this bad boy in 2 years?
Yeah, man.
Oh, I guess they had pressure to get it done on the year 2000.
Yeah, like that was kind of the whole point.
It's got to open.
Yeah, which is, you know, honestly, for a civil engineering like undertaking, not bad.
Mm-mm.
Not bad at all. So on opening day, right? Let me kind of like pitch this to you, right?
Paint the picture for me, Jim. Imagine that I'm on the committee.
It's opening day. You're on the committee. Well, I'm gonna bring you to the bridge, right? Yeah. So you're on the committee. You know, you got like the big pair of scissors,
big scissors,
and the ribbon, big scissors.
I'm ready.
Cut the ribbon. You cut the ribbon. And you start walking across the bridge.
Mm-hmm. I smash a glass on it, or some champagne on it.
You smash a bottle of champagne. Smash it on the bridge. And then you start walking across the bridge, you know, and the crowd's following you. And then as you're all walking, the bridge starts to sway a little bit. And that's not ideal.
That's quite peculiar.
It's a little bit peculiar. Why is the bridge swaying? Why is the bridge moving under me feet, eh?
Oh my God.
Bridges ain't supposed to move.
Ain't they supposed to be stable?
I thought bridges were supposed to be steady.
You mean to tell me we spent this much chalk on this?
We spent 18.2 million quid on this bridge, and it's wibbly wobbly.
It's wobbly as Richard Hammond's car.
I'ma call it the wibbly wobbly bridge.
Wibbly wobbly bridge.
The old wibble wobble bridge.
Yeah, it's where you can't get your wibble, but you can get quite a wobble for a
all
couple.
All that wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, bridgey stuff.
Yeah, I had to get me a little chippy on the other end of that bridge, make some quid.
So.
Yeah, shows how sensitive we are to the bridge. Sorry about that, folks.
I threw in a Doctor Who reference there. I don't know.
Did you really?
I feel like we were pretty good to him.
Yeah, hey, listen, y'all, you got to start somewhere, America.
You got to start somewhere. I got to be honest, Derek. I'm not a big Doctor Who fan.
Me neither, man. I know we're gonna. Some people are gonna check out. I haven't invested.
People are gonna be mad.
I've like, watched selected episodes.
I tried to watch it, and like it was just a little bit too weird.
It's one of those things. I bet it's like a niche audience. Like it's one of those you're gonna love it or you're gonna hate it. I don't hate it, right? So I feel like if I sat down and someone gave me like a list of curated, like these are the ones you have to watch for plot, maybe I could get into it. But it's not for everybody.
That's fair. That's fair. Anyway, moving swiftly along.
Mm-hmm.
So the bridge basically sways, and it's not that big of a sway. So it's basically like 3 inches is the maximum sway.
That's not too bad, but enough for you can feel it, right?
Which is not horrible, but you can definitely feel it. And so obviously this causes a lot of concern because resonant failure has been a very common theme in what we've been talking about, Derek. And so this is a cause for concern, and the bridge builders, the engineers, basically, they kind of do some research into this unexpected oscillation because they were not expecting this. And they end up calling it synchronous lateral excitation.
Synchronous lateral excitation?
Yes.
Oh, that's sick.
And so here's basically, so do you remember when we talked about the Angers Bridge?
Yeah.
in France.
Pissed off the French, yeah.
We pissed off the French, but what caused that bridge to fail, right, is like the wind, the storm that was actively already there was causing the bridge to sway. And that forced the soldiers who were marching on the bridge to stumble.
Yeah.
Right. And so subconsciously they were matching the sway of the bridge and making it worse.
And becoming like slight wind sails for it.
Yeah. So a similar phenomenon actually happens here where basically the bridge, the natural frequency of the bridge, as it turns out, is like 0.67 hertz, right? So that basically means that every 0.67 seconds, it will complete its oscillation, right?
All things considered, that's pretty big. That's pretty quick for a structure that size, huh?
That's pretty slow in terms of general frequency. Yeah, it's about 0.67. So, but it turns out that the human body, like, so you step apparently about every seven, basically, you know, in a very similar range of frequency, right? So every step that you're taking is going to be between, you know, like 5 and 1.3 hertz, basically, is kind of what the studies show. Or 0.5, excuse me, 0.5 to 1.3 hertz.
That's crazy. So it just happens to be the resident, well, like the frequency that you walk to?
Yeah. So as it turns out, you know, basically, and they had, you know, at this point in time, it's early 2000s or late 90s, I guess, resonant vibrational modes in suspension bridges are very well understood. But this one, because of the difference in design of this bridge, and because it's, it's just a different design that hasn't really been done very much before. They weren't expecting this lateral motion of the bridge, right? So the bridge doesn't have any vibration in the vertical direction, really, to speak of. Okay. But it does in the lateral, because basically what happens is as people are stepping on the bridge, it starts this oscillation. And then people subconsciously, without thinking about it, are basically compensating for that sway. And so it acts as a, it causes people to basically fall into step.
Oh,
But not in,
not
but
on not purpose.
Into like, not on purpose, but not up, down step, right? But like
in step the with the oscillation. Side to
side. Yeah. Which then creates a positive feedback loop and makes the oscillation larger.
Wow, that's an interesting psychological thing. Like, you're really just doing your own individual thing, five groups of people across the bridge, but you're all, like, you know, you're wired the same. You're all trying to keep balance the same type of way.
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
And because the bridge motion is happening uniformly or relatively, you know, that's happening at the same time. No matter where you are on the bridge, you're going to be trying to compensate for that same motion at the same time as everybody else on the bridge. And so they weren't expecting that. And in bridges that are really low mass, like this one, because it's basically all made out of aluminum, so it's very light. In very low mass bridges, this problem is exacerbated because the amount of input that's required to kind of start this oscillation is reduced.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so it's interesting. And yeah, so then they're like, okay, well, how do we mitigate this? And so what they actually do is they shut down the bridge, right?
Brilliant.
Really soon after.
A novel idea.
And what they end up doing is they basically look at ways to reduce the vibration, or to basically change the resonant frequency of the bridge. So basically, to push the resonant frequency of the bridge outside that 1.3 hertz window that people would cause it to vibrate. And basically what they say is, in order to make the bridge stiffer, in order to move that resonant frequency, it wasn't feasible because it would change the appearance of the bridge significantly.
Oh, and like, if it's not the Millennium Bridge, we don't want it.
Exactly, right? So what they end up doing is they put in viscous fluid dampers on the bridge. So they put in 37 viscous fluid dampeners, and they also put 52 tuned mass dampers onto the bridge. So we talked a little bit about dampers last episode.
Because
They did try to utilize those on Galloping Gertie, the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, but it failed because they damaged the seals on those hydraulic cylinders. But here is an example of where it worked beautifully.
Right on.
So basically, again, they're using these fluid dampers to control the lateral and vertical movement of the bridge. And they're also have some that are basically like these big V-shaped dampers. So rather than like a traditional damper, you might expect to be fairly squat because it's supporting like the underside of the bridge causeway. They actually have some that are really long and they connect them diagonally underneath the bridge span, basically to create triangles. But one of those triangular legs is actually a fluid dampener, right? So basically as the bridge tries to rack in order to oscillate, you have those dampers contracting and expanding at different rates and causing the harmonic oscillation to be absorbed.
That is really, really smart. That's brilliant. Like, and since we've been talking about bridges, every time the rare times I go over a bridge, like I went to the botanical garden and they have this really neat like curved suspension bridge. And I was just like, that's a dampener. I have no idea what type, but I know that's a dampener.
Yeah, yeah, and they're really quite, they're fascinating, really.
That's crazy.
And then we haven't talked about tuned mass dampers before, but let's talk about those real quick. So they're also called harmonic absorbers or seismic dampers. And basically what it is it's a mass basically held onto a structure by a spring and a damper. So it's got a hydraulic damper built into it, basically. But what it does, right, is as that bridge starts, like, or in this case a bridge, but whatever structure it is attached to, starts to move, it basically causes, because you have that mass there with the spring and the damper, it, and they're tuned specifically for the structure that they're a part of, it actually is going to kind of create a motion in the opposite direction of the movement, of the oscillation. And so it'll actually very quickly create a destructive resonance of whatever oscillation is happening in the structure. And so that destructive resonance will then cause the harmonics to very quickly return to zero.
That's absolutely brilliant. Simple, like, it's as simple as, you know, Newton's laws, but in this very, like, engineered situation, you're using the weight of the damper, the weight of the bridge, and the, like, I'm sure they even have to tune the, what do you call it, the compression of the spring that they put into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
To make sure that it's not adding.
Yeah, tuned mass dampers are like very sophisticated and very like purpose-built pieces of equipment, because yeah, the mass has to be tuned to obviously, to be effective, the spring has to be tuned, the damper has to be tuned, and sometimes there's like multiple spring mass damper setups in a single, you know, quote unquote single mass dampener. But they're really quite fascinating structures, and they're used in bridges and spacecraft. They're used in vehicles.
Do they use those in buildings, in wind like turbine, around
yeah,
earthquakes?
They're used in building. Yeah, famously, actually, there's Taipei 101. Okay, so it's called Taipei 101, and it features this enormous tuned mass damper that basically, it's fascinating what it does. It's this really big tower. It's very, very tall. It was the tallest building in the world until 2010. It's, what is 508 meters in freedom units?
Calculating.
So that's 1,667 feet tall. That is a very big tower. And it is also in Taipei, which is in an earthquake-prone place. So large, tall buildings have a really hard time there because if the earth is moving, that tower is not having a good time.
They're going to move too.
So the harmonic dampener basically creates a counter motion in the event of an earthquake so that the building doesn't fall over, right? And that's the whole point of mass dampers. It's fascinating. It's really quite fascinating. We should do an entire episode on mass dampers and similar systems. But anyway, suffice it to say for now that they install these systems on the bridge, and it completely eliminates the vibrations and oscillations.
Really?
First try. Well, I mean, so they do test it, actually, which is good.
Yeah, of course. But the first solution they thought of, like, it actually came to be.
Yep. And so what they actually do initially, before they do anything, they actually put a bunch of instrumentation on the bridge, and then they have 275 people like walk across it in specific patterns to test it. And so they basically are able to collect data from the bridge in order to inform their design decisions based, again, because like all these systems require such tuning, in order to be effective. And so they go ahead and they implement these changes. It cost them £5 million to do it.
Ah, okay. So they're budget before, but no longer.
Now they're back over. But the bridge reopens in February 22nd of 2002, and it has no longer been the subject of significant vibration. But people still call it the Wobbly Bridge.
Whoa, wait. Do we get through a bridge episode? Well, actually, any episode without a failure?
No failure. Well, yeah, so the failure in this case is actually kind of the public perception, right?
Marketing.
Yeah. So basically, apparently this plays into like some of the other Millennium projects apparently not being super great.
Well, it turns out when you think of it like 3 years before and you're trying to rush to meet the deadline of the millennia, it's just like, we got one chance. Think about the pressure.
Yeah, so like the Millennium Dome, which is another thing that they built in the southeast of London, apparently like had some problems. I didn't read into this because it's not
a bridge.
But it had some problems with its development. And so the kind of this failure, not failure, but this problem with the Millennium Bridge kind of had a lot of, because it closed 2 days after opening. I mean, they shut it down fast.
That's a pretty big PR failure, right?
That's a pretty big PR.
Your ribbon
failure.
Cutting and your battle smack, but you can't, like, everyone can't get off work immediately. You couldn't even get to the weekend to see the thing.
Yeah. So there was a lot of public criticism of the Millennium Project just because of this kind of setback, right?
Right.
And that's actually another really big part of engineering, especially with these large civil architectural, high-profile projects, is the public perception, especially because a lot of these are funded through government, you know. If it faces a lot of criticism and negative press, basically, you can have political elements basically shut down projects like this or cause serious roadblocks to projects like this. If there's enough pressure from the constituency.
You know, that's a good point. I wonder how many, like, Millennium projects that they were scoping out maybe in the next 10 years may have gotten scrapped because of the negative perception of just this. Because, like,
yeah,
think about
absolutely.
It. There has been worse. We've talked about worse disasters on bridges so far. 3-inch oscillation ain't that bad considering they caught it, but the public doesn't care about that. They're like,
right.
Well, you're going to advertise this bridge, primey, crocky. I can't even see it.
It's wibbly wobbly.
It's wibbly wobbly. I've seen it on the tube. I go over to the metro and I can't even see it.
I've seen it on the telly. It's wibbly wobbly.
It's wibbly wobbly. And do they still call it the Wobbly Bridge today?
They do, apparently.
Right on.
So the name is stuck.
Right on. I mean, I'm excited to see the pictures because, like, I kind of go into this raw and I let the viewers see it when I overlay and then I see it when I'm editing.
It really is beautiful. I'll send you a picture now. It really is a beautiful picture, beautiful bridge.
Oh, that
stunning.
Looks quite good.
Yeah, really quite stunning. It's got this, it looks really futuristic, right?
It really does.
And that's why they used it. So they've used it in a couple different movies. They have used it, as I said previously, in the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then also, it actually is featured in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. It is actually destroyed by Death Eaters.
Now listen, Warner Brothers, relax. It's just a still image. Calm down.
It's free use. It's fair use.
Oh, yeah. It just fits right in to like all of the CGI around it. Like, you wouldn't even know that wasn't a CGI bridge there.
Right. And yeah, to me, it's just... this is like, here's an interesting panorama shot as well from the bridge. And this kind of gives you an idea for like how low those suspension cables are.
Oh, you can literally see over it.
Yeah, literally you can see over top of the suspension cables, which is fascinating. I would love to have like a more in-depth engineering analyses of like how they made that work. I think it's basically because there's actually a Y structure underneath the bridge, right? So basically what you end up having is there's these Ys that are actually holding the weight of the bridge, and then the footbridge, the actual place where people are walking, is elevated above that. So
you're like sharing the load.
I guess so. I think it's just a matter of where that load is passed. It's just fascinating. It's just really cool. It's just a really cool structure. But yeah, very, very futuristic looking. Quite fascinating structure.
Yeah, it's a good looking bridge. You know, I love me a bridge. You heard my reaction when I learned we were doing a bridge miniseries. And it's just one of those, you just got to keep going back for more. It's just so clean. Absolutely. And it's like tall enough where you could like put your ferry under it.
Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is a major constriction, or rather a major constraint of the design, because this is going across the River Thames, which is an important trade hub for London. Or a trade route for London for hundreds of years at this point.
Yeah, you can't disrupt trade. A lot more people than the like Port Authority would be mad at you at that point.
That's very true. Well, yeah, so Derek, that is the Millennium Bridge. Really not an engineering failure this week, but a triumph of
mitigation.
Basically having a problem and mitigating it.
Yeah, so. The public can be upset, right? Oh, bridge is closed. But the reality is they nipped it in the bud that there is going to be no disaster here, not on our watch, not from natural causes. And they actually, shut it down, got the job done, and probably learned a lot about, what does novel bridge design do in regards to maintenance? Like, you can't have the same crew that maintains the Golden Gate Bridge do this one, because it's a totally, they probably can, they're pros, structures. But, it's a totally different SOP, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, they're completely different structures, that's for sure.
It's so gorgeous, and, I can't imagine, when you're thinking about something like in London, they have to even consider the force of snow that's going to be set on it. And, these are little variables. I drive across a bridge on a road trip I would never think about.
Absolutely.
Outstanding.
Well, Derek, that is, I think, our episode for today. Next week, I think we're going to talk about the Golden Gate Bridge, which is one I've been really excited to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Because it truly is one of the marvels of the engineering world. It's just a fascinating structure. So I think that's what our episode is going to be next week. And I think that's going to be our finale on suspension bridges for now.
Right on.
So I'm very excited for it.
See, for Christmas, our viewer, what you get is a couple of non-engineering failures. Well, not failures at all. They're just engineering wonders.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to get... I don't want anybody to, think that we're always about, the failure and the gloom, right?
There's some good out there too.
Storm crows, absolutely. I do want to talk about the triumphs of engineering as well, because there are many feats of engineering in our daily lives that are absolutely miraculous. Truly fascinating. So Derek, what do you got to plug?
Nothing. Nothing at all at the moment. But I got some interesting ideas. I really think, our viewership has gone up. We've gotten viewers from all around the world. And I figured once we hit a secret milestone that I'm not going to talk about, I would like to do a merch drop, because right now I'm going to plug something that y'all can't have. Ooh, I got me an editor's jacket. So I got a Nike, like, athletic hoodie zip, and it's got the Everything's a Spring logo on it. And I was like, you know what? This is a one of one just for the editor.
And Derek got me a snapback and a driver's cap, also with the Everything's a Spring logo on them. And they look so sharp. I love them.
The man likes hats.
I love my hats, and Derek got me a couple great ones. So thank you, Derek. I don't think I said that yet, but thank you so much. I love those hats.
Oh, of course, man. Merry Christmas.
Thanks, man. But yeah, so yeah, follow us on our Twitter. Go ahead and shout us out if you can. Let us know what you thought of the episode. Let us know if you'd like to see future episodes. We are coming up on the end of our Suspension Bridge kind of mini series. So if you've got another mini series that you want to see us do or hear us talk about, let us know. Follow us on YouTube if you want to get some of the visuals for the episode as well. We'll have the pictures and different images and relevant any sort of relevant visual cues that might be useful will be on the YouTube feed. Other than that, please leave us a 5-star rating or review here on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. That really helps our show. And thank you so much for listening. Derek, let's bounce.
Let's bounce.